You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB as we're live at Chiefs Training Camp. Our camp coverage brought to you by the Missouri Lottery, Mosaic Life Care, Metro PCS, Rally House, and Kansas Sampler as we broadcast live. Why don't you hang on real quick? Why don't you move that? Let's not be quite that.
Yeah, I'm a better photographer.
Gosh. Yeah, okay. All right. I don't know. We talk some Chiefs football. Nate Taylor joins us here in the program from The Athletic. You can read his work there where he handles the Chiefs beat. Tomorrow I will be over. Today it's Military Appreciation Day tomorrow. Rain in the forecast.
Yes, a lot of rain.
And that might suck for the fans. So make sure you're listening here at 810. We'll let you know as soon as we know anything here tomorrow morning with the Border Patrol. I don't want anyone to drive up here and be turned away, because if they go inside, right? Last year, Curtis, when they took it inside, the fans are not allowed to go in, right?
Correct.
Okay, so that would shut down the fans. So hopefully the Chiefs, if they're going in, they'll make that decision early. Last year they tried to go outside, then the rain hit, and they ended up moving inside. So we'll see. There's a lot of rain in the forecast. I'll be over at the Air Force Base with the Hercules C-130. You ever seen those?
No, I don't think so.
No, that was what just flew over.
Did I miss it?
Yeah. Do some neat thing. They do, like, practice runs where they drop things out of the back and hit the target. And,
yep.
Yeah, very cool. So looking forward to that tomorrow as we'll be over at the Air Reserve, Air National Guard Reserve, and talk with some of the guys who have some very interesting stories about flying those planes into hostile territory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for the freedom.
Yeah,
for the country.
Absolutely.
For everyone here.
That's right. So good stuff coming up tomorrow. Good stuff coming up right now. Nate Taylor, as I mentioned here, talking Chiefs football. Nate, I talked to you last before the preseason game, right?
Yeah, hours before we saw semi-real football.
Yeah, I like the semi-real football is a good way to put it. What was your biggest takeaway from that game, if anything?
Yeah, I've wrestled with this because, you know, I have to write sort of in the moment or shortly after the game ends. And
right.
Mostly, you know, my thought was, well, at least Patrick Mahomes is kind of mildly frustrated, I think is the term I wrote, because a lot of the veterans in the locker room after the game kind of just know, like, you know, I mean, even Mitch Morse yesterday was just like, it's a practice that's glorified because it's in front of fans and it's in the stadium and it has the appearance of it being a real game, but it's not really a real game. But it did make me feel like, okay, Patrick wants to go right now. So that was the biggest indicator, is obviously how bad the first team offense looked from a pass blocking standpoint, and the fact that Mahomes didn't have as successful of a two series as he thought he was going
to
have.
Yeah, and he wanted to get out there and have some success.
Right.
So have to wait. Are they missing opportunities to get him reps? I mean, Andy Reid, we trust, but
right.
But I mean, what is the harm in playing the guy? You know, he needs experience. This isn't a 10, 12-year veteran like Alex Smith. Is a totally different situation. I'm surprised he didn't play more, that you didn't leave him out there until you had some positive things happen.
Right, because, you know, most coaches will tell you, we try to script. Now, script is a word that I shouldn't necessarily use because it's not the regular season, but they'll try to get, hey, here's 15 to 20 players we feel comfortable with, right?
Right.
That we know where everyone's supposed to line up, and this will just give us a good indicator of just evaluating for, you know, much further down the road. They got 9 snaps. I mean, that's... In some ways, that's awful because you let the defense be out there, I think, a little bit too long. So at least Bob Sutton has a ton of film to look at. And, hey, here's here's what Tano did. Here's Breland. Okay, here's Armani Watts that we just threw out there, who probably doesn't know everything because he missed some time to start camp. But, I mean, Patrick got 9 snaps. And he attempted, 7 passes?
Mm-hmm.
Which
I do appreciate that he at least threw the ball around.
Yeah, they were for preseason opener, they were pretty aggressive. And once you saw the first series, where it's like, okay, 4 plays, all of them except for one was a pass. Okay, this should be good. Like, I'm assuming we're going to get 2 more series. And then the clock kind of runs out because, you know, Wheaton goes down the field and scores a touchdown. And then you go, you know, another 5 and out. And then he's done for the day. And, you know, I think – someone, I can't remember who it was, but someone in the locker room asked Patrick, like, did you try to convince Andy to put you back out there? And he's like, no, that'll be for a later day. But it's clear to me that he's got to play the entire first half against Atlanta on Friday. There's no need to, like, to not treat this with the seriousness that needs to be, because he needs as many reps as possible to get as many game situations to prepare him for the regular season, because you can only do so much out here. And I'm pointing to the practice fields at a training camp. There's only so much you can do based on the time limit that the league has put in.
Does Andy Reid believe that? Because when asked the question, he's like, well, we simulate a lot of that stuff out here.
I mean, you can, but, like, can I ski it against another team?
I don't know. I don't know how you can simulate a real rush.
No.
When you put a yellow jersey
here
on the guy.
Yeah.
And I think that's the defining moment of a quarterback, isn't it? I mean, a lot of guys can stand there where they're a no-touch,
mm-hmm.
right? All-time quarterback. Dad,
yep.
playing quarterback for both teams
yep.
is basically what you get out here, right? No one's going to rush him. We're just going to cover everybody versus when they're coming at him. I mean, that's where, you know, here's one for you for the old one. You separate the wheat from the chaff.
There you go.
Here's another old fart phrase for you.
The cream rises to the top.
Yeah, men from the boys type
yeah.
of thing. I mean, that's where you really make your mark, is who can do it when the 300-pound bodies are flying around you. So, I mean, I do question Andy Reid. I mean, I'm not, you know, asking him to be fired, but I'm like, geez, how about a
yeah,
few
this,
reps for this
isn't,
kid?
Yeah, this isn't Alex Smith. And in terms of cohesion, and I wrote this in The Athletic yesterday, and you can go read it online, but not only does Patrick need cohesion with the receivers and the timing and the chemistry there, this offensive line needs reps. That was the clearest thing. That was like maybe secondarily.
That was the most second most disappointing.
Yeah,
thing.
Secondarily, that was like the big thing where it's like, oh, like these guys, you look at the roster, I mean, 4 years, 5 years, 4 years, 3 years, like these guys are all veterans. There's no rookie that's going to be projected to play a massive amount of snaps, and they don't look totally right as of right now. And how are they going to get better if they don't go against other competition for a longer duration than what we saw on Thursday? So, you know, Mike Kafka, the quarterback's coach, you know, was asked yesterday, like, how did Pat do against the blitz or against the rush when you didn't anticipate him, you know, running for his life half the plays? And now you got to work at that. Like, okay, how can you scramble out of the pocket? How can you use the pass protections to be in a better spot to throw the ball more accurately? So, he's going to take some hits this year. That was clearly what was learned on Thursday, but they need to get better so that he doesn't take as many hits to ruin his first, you know, potential year as the starter.
I know the Texans had a bad year last year, but I'm not buying any thought that, oh, the Texans really needed to make a show of this more. They're trying to set a tempo.
Right.
They've got a veteran coach that's been around, has won two division titles, granted with 9-7 records,
mm-hmm.
but he's won a couple of division titles. He's got a new contract. You know, he's not out there trying to save his job or anything like that. So there's no reason to believe that there was any more emphasis put on that game by the Texans than there was the Chiefs, and so they didn't look that good. And
without J.J. Watt,
yeah.
without Merciless, and without Clowney, you know.
Yeah, they're
best
big guys. Players,
yeah,
probably.
They're three big guys.
I talked to Reggie Ragland this morning. He sat down here, and you know, he's quoted the last couple of days about talking about we're going to stop the run.
Mm-hmm.
And he was adamant about it here, sitting here with me, about stopping the run. The Chiefs didn't have Hitchens and Ragland, and they didn't have a number of their guys out on the field either. Are you convinced that the Chiefs even want to really stop the run? And I don't mean that they want to suck.
Right.
But you know, math guys in and around the NFL, the Pro Football Focus guys like Eric Eager, we'll tell you that one of the more overrated stats out there is your run defense. Like, you know, you don't want to suck. Yeah, you want to be number one in every single category, but you're not going to prioritize stopping the run because you end up being not good enough against the pass. Is that just where we're at? And while Reggie Ragland can say that's Andy Reid's approach, and that, you know, the Bob Sutton's inability to stop the run is driven by Andy Reid's, you know, maybe more modern view of the less importance to stopping the run?
Yeah, I think there's a modest sort of give and take. If you're a pleasure player like Reggie, and, you know, we discussed this yesterday, the idea of, well, you know, you were on the field when Derrick Henry was running all over you. From a player standpoint in that playoff game, you take that to heart. I think fans and us as media members, you appreciate that he remembers that. And understands that's why we lost the playoff game, because we couldn't get stops on third down, and he was running the ball all over us. When I mentioned Derrick Henry, from a bigger picture, if you expand out from the Bob Suttons of the world, and probably Andy Reid to a degree too, is, well, we want to be competent at tackling, at stopping the run, or limiting the run. But, you know, the days of, you know, selling out for the run Like, that's not going to be what this version of the NFL is, because you need multiple cornerbacks and multiple players in the open space to make the tackle so that, you know, you get – and I think Anthony Hitchens mentioned this today to us too. Like, first down is the importance. Like, limiting the run on first down so that second and third down don't become so unpredictable that you have to cover the entire field versus, okay, now it's third and eight and we force the team into some options that – they wish they had more. I appreciate Reggie. I believe him when he says that, like, you know, we're going to take this mentality to stop the run. But the important thing is just tackle somebody, because that sets you up to have success for third down or to force pressure, which forces turnovers.
I spoke to a scout I know about Tano Passanio before the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe his phrase was,
oh, boy.
Don't know why he's on their roster. I mean, couldn't have been more negative about the guy.
Well, I mean, he physically, he's on the he's going to be on the roster. Yeah.
He looks like Tarzan.
I mean, he looks like a monster.
That's you know, the question.
In a good way, not in a bad way.
Does he play like Gene? That's what we find out. But then I talked to a different scout over the weekend. I said, tell me what you think. And I didn't even bring up Tano Passanio. I was actually asking him about the Chiefs draft. Like, okay, let me see what you know. You go ask a guy, you ask him about his team, he ain't going to say anything.
Right. Yeah, no, of course.
Ask him about another team, that guy sucks and that guy's good. And, you know, everyone's much more free with their commentary. And so I was talking about Breland Speaks, and he said, I'll tell you, the guy to watch is Tano Passanio. I'm like, all right, this is amazing. These are two guys, gainfully employed, accomplished scouts.
Yep.
And I got one who's like, guy blows, don't know why he's on a roster. And another guy's like, this is the guy, right? Look out for this guy, which speaks to beauties in the eye of the beholder. And even in the NFL, there can be such a drastic difference of opinion on a guy.
Because there's not enough game film, honestly, on Tano. That's the thing. Like, there's not enough game film. So it's interesting that you can have two guys who have such a different view.
Yeah. And it was, you know, and then the guy said, well, listen, he doesn't fit what we do, but for what they want to do, watch this guy. He's the guy. So so now I don't know what to think. Right? Came into the year. I didn't see anything out of Passanio, really, last year. And now I come into the year, like, kind of negative on him, very negative on him. And then I get this thing. I was like, okay, first of all, I thought he actually did a few things in the first preseason game.
I'm nodding my head for folks.
Did a few more things than D Ford, perhaps, even.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then Breland Speaks, who, by the way, this gentleman said, second round, I don't know where they're going with that one.
He was not on anybody's second round radar. Just say that.
And then the other guy, who didn't like Passanio, was like, oh, yeah, second round, absolutely, that's where you had to get the guy. I mean, it's amazing. One guy's
that's
Speaks
cool.
And no Passanio, the other guy's Passanio and no Speaks. So,
huh.
For what it's worth, so... Now I don't know what the hell to think, right? So what did you think of what you saw and what they got at outside linebacker besides
the main
Justin
guys.
Houston?
Right, besides the main guy. So
not just Justin Houston, because D Ford, I'm still.
oh, D. So I spent a lot of time during the game, like in the press box, just solely on linebacker position.
Right.
Because you also want to see what Terrence Smith of the world and Oligways, guys who were playing in front of Hitchens and Ragland who were sitting out. So my buddy Seth Kaiser wrote this for The Athletic, and I believe this to be the case, that, like, I've seen enough film and I've seen how guys sort of progress, like, from year one to year two to year three. I think Tano Passanio is capable. It's just, can he put it together? And he talked today and he said that he's starting to understand the playbook better. Obviously, going, you know, through an entire NFL season gets you better prepared to have some success now. But he was the one who provided the most pressure on the field against the Texans. Now, it's Brandon Wheaton. Again, it's second and mostly second-team offense, some first-team offensive line out there. But, you know, you can go on The Athletic and you can watch the plays that Seth sort of points out. And Tano's the one who's getting there the fastest, who's getting there on the more consistent rate. Now, they didn't have a sack, but there's clearly plays where the ball's released and he's making contact with the quarterback. So he's starting to trend in the right direction. Breland, I just appreciated his effort because it's the first, you know, it's your first NFL, you know, quotation marks, first NFL game. for the preseason. But he gave effort. He doesn't have moves yet. He's very raw from an NFL standpoint, but he's got the strength. He's got the ability. One of my good buddies, Nick Jacobs, mentioned does Breeland need to lose some weight to have a better bend to get to the quarterback a little faster? That will remain to be seen. But Tano looks like he can be a possible, capable, reliable option if D4 continues to get ran over on
that, that
on
he can actually down. He can actually beat a guy, which is in a preseason game, particularly game number one, yes. Neither team game plans.
Did he beat a guy or did he bull rush?
He bull rushed a guy, but he also had some rips moves.
He had an inside move where he beat the right tackle.
Yes, yep, and he's now using speed to then combine power versus just power.
Get him off balance and then
overwhelming the offensive line, because obviously guys are going to know what you're good at. So he needs to find that change up to make himself effective. Breeland, just go, man. Like, the preseason, they're going to fine-tune him throughout the year. Obviously, I think he's going to be on the field on third down specifically. But just give energy. Just give effort. Just bull rush.
If he's on the field on third down, when is D4 done?
First and second. I mean, we're gonna have this debate until September 9th. Because I just believe that Bob Sutton is going to give D a chance, even though the first play of the preseason.
The only thing he does is rush the quarterback, and you're taking him off the field then.
The first play of the preseason, they run to D4's side, and D4 is not involved in the play.
No.
I hear everything Bob says. I kind of have a feel of his personality, and I just think, like, he's going to be on the field September 9th, and then slowly, maybe those snaps go to the younger guys. But I mean, D4 could be, he'll be on the field the majority of the time. I also should say this too, like, they put D4 inside a little bit more frequently than they are at least have done so far with Justin Houston, which of course was assistant linebacker coach Mike Smith saying, like, oh, Justin Houston's gonna be all over the field. Well, he moves a little bit, but they're more willing to put D4 inside than say, you know, Justin Houston or any of the younger guys, Tano and Breeland.
You mentioned that then at some point the snaps will go to the younger guys, which is a weird thing to say about a guy who's 27 years old and a first
in a contract year.
Yeah,
I mean,
that does not bode well very much for him being an impact player.
But I mean, I'm telling you, like, Twitter lit up on the first play of the game.
Yeah,
and I like, you know,
he looked bad.
The first play from scrimmage, and then we watch it in real time, and then, you know, there's a little bit of a delay for, you know, people who are watching the game on KCTV5. So my head immediately goes up and says, is that what I just saw? And it's just like, yeah, that's not good, D. Now, he didn't play a ton of snaps, but that is not profitable playing ability.
Reggie Ragland said, I asked him, and I was kind of in the back of my head. I was thinking, and people can go hear it at 810WHP.com. But I said, you know, he was talking about, I said, hey, I took him down the road where I wanted him to go.
Were you gentle?
Yeah, he's a good guy. I love talking to him. It's fun. I said, you know, a lot of people say stopping the run's a mindset. He's like, oh, yeah, that's a mindset. And, you know, we're going to do it. I said, when guys don't stop the run, like, you're known as a thumper, right? You came in, you're a guy that's going to square up and put a pop on a guy, and, you know, you've always had that reputation. I said, when guys don't do that, and in the back of my head, I'm thinking Marcus Peters, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When guys don't do that,
yep.
You know, do you call them out? Do you police them? Are you and Hitchens going to be like, hey, guys, what's well, not because, you know, it's one thing to say we're going to stop the run, but it takes all 11 guys to do it.
Exactly.
And if somebody's not going to do it, are you going to police? He said, the eye in the sky don't lie, right? Yep. Which is the old adage,
yep.
Right? The
mm-hmm.
film will show everything. Okay. But I presume D. Ford and Marcus Peters watched film all their years leading up to last year and throughout last year.
Mm-hmm.
And neither one of them really wanted to do anything when it comes to the run.
Marcus only wanted to tackle you in order to get the football out. And he would say that my primary job is not to tackle. You know, the Deion Sanders kind of, mm-hmm. like, that's not why you're paying me millions, man, even though – you know, someone's got to make a tackle.
If the
ball carrier's 10 yards down the field, somebody's got to make a tackle. And guess what? You're in the frame, my man.
Yeah.
You're in the frame.
Yeah.
But that would be his thought. For someone like D. Ford, I mean, sacks are cool and all. Like, go get it. I understand it helps your contract negotiation standpoint. But you see that guy across from you named Justin Houston, like, who's doing everything. And if, you know, I feel like Eric Berry and Justin Houston have such – a shadow over all these other guys, But if you're not willing to work to their to where they are, or at least give the effort that they're asking you to give, or at least try to be there sound from an assignment sound standpoint, that's where I think the disconnect comes from me, because it's like, well, yeah, I hear you say all these things of, like, not only just the mentality, but, like, well, you know, I see what Justin does, or I see what Eric does, and it's like, well, do you have it in you, or is it just you see it, you recognize it, but, you know, sacks are sacks.
Right.
One of the things on Breland Speaks, I watched the Packers preseason game. Mm-hmm. You know, NFL Network, I'll just replay
just
them all.
Run them. Yeah.
And so while I was doing other things, I just had it on, and I wanted to slap Kevin Harlan because he just kept talking about how good Josh Jackson was. And that's the corner the Chiefs didn't take when they took Breland Speaks. And so just something to think about now.
Yep. Uh-huh.
Maybe that's Kevin in his Packer PR mode and, you know, hype all the young guys. I don't know.
I will say he was. Like, if you looked at his tape in college, he was very good.
Oh, he's great. Yeah, last year, I was tremendous.
Yeah.
So. But, yeah, just something to think about. Do you have a couple minutes? Can we take a break?
Yeah, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
We'll take a break. Come back. We're talking to Nate Taylor from The Athletic. Get your subscription today, as he does a great job covering the Chiefs, all kinds of great stuff about the Chiefs on The Athletic. We'll talk about something I heard about the John Dorsey players. We'll do that next with Nate Taylor here in the program.
All right, the Jazz into the hour answer. Who's the only man to play at least 500 games with both the Royals and Blue Jays? A question that was immediately answered by multiple people in our tent. Not
your best difficult effort.
No, you want them to be gettable and moderately entertaining. And when the answer is John Mayberry, it entertains me at least.
You bombed, let's be honest. Is his mic on?
I think it is.
Well, no, I pressed it.
Oh,
pressed
okay, it. Here we go.
I messed around with it.
You're right.
Sorry. it is the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. What were we playing for there, Curtis?
Playing for a little Jazz Louisiana Kitchen.
Great Cajun food from Jazz, Louisiana Kitchen. Might I invite you to go down and enjoy some live music. Great happy hour as well at all three locations out at the Legends. 39th and State Line by the KU Med Center, and in Independence right there by the Silverstein Ice Center's Arena. Your pre- and post-headquarters for the Kansas City Mavericks. You know, they're going to start practicing, and that'll be nice because it'll mean days like today are in our rearview mirror.
Yeah.
I feel like a human armpit after being out here for 5.5 hours.
And it's only 80-something. I mean,
87 degrees or whatever.
Sticky, is it me?
There were
it
some days, sticky? Remember the first year they were up here, they didn't have this nice setup, and we were sitting on wet grass, and it was fly central.
Yeah,
it was unreal.
They hadn't paved this, and it was wet. It, like, would rain every night.
Oh, man.
And it was like sitting in a swamp. And, of course, it was only 98
right
every day. That year.
And as you'd sit in your chair, you'd realize the chair was
squishing
half inch by half inch and into the turf.
Oh, then what they did was they did the rocks, you know, the rock.
Mm-hmm. To try to cover it up. Yeah,
and then they came in with the paving here. Yeah. So we've watched it evolve here at Mo West. We're talking to Nate Taylor from The Athletic. I was told that there were – I said, hey, just asking guys around the league, what's your feeling on why John Dorsey's not here? He said – and the guy said, a lot of character issues brought in by John Dorsey, which speaks to what's going on over in Cleveland, you know, with the Callaway kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, already, you know, had questions at Florida, had marijuana,
mm-hmm.
Possession of marijuana there. Baker Mayfield's, you know,
question. Yep. I'm so intrigued by Baker Mayfield. What's going to happen to this guy?
I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it all goes. But, you know, and you can say, okay, Marcus Peters, we know, kicked off the team at Washington, Tyreek Hill, you know. But he said, listen, there are a lot of guys. He said, you know, not all of them. He said, they're not all like, you know, Marcus Peters getting kicked off the team.
Yeah.
So, but they were guys that, like, you know, we list and say, hey, character question on this, question on this, question on this. I bring that up. You're like, what do you care? John Dorsey's not here anymore, right? I can hear somebody driving in their car saying that. My point is, if that is it, and if Andy Reid is honest and, well, John, you got to ask John about that. And the personnel really was on John Dorsey, and he was not bringing in the guys Andy Reid wanted. That speaks to why he's not here, and it also speaks
and
to
– And who got a contract extension?
Andy Reid. Mm-hmm. And it also speaks to maybe we're in more of a transition than we realize. We really think it's like, hey, it's just Smith, the Mahomes, and everything else is the same. But maybe there is a little bit more of a transition going on here, and maybe John Dorsey did have the kind of juice that Clark Hunt said he had, and it didn't work. And Andy Reid has said, listen, I need more guys that fit our profile. And that's part of what Brett Veach was brought in here for. And we should – and I bring it up just because if this season doesn't go the way we want it to, this is the first draft for Brett Veach.
Yes, correct.
He tweaked a little bit with Reggie Ragland and
– Cam Irving.
Couldn't find a better guy to talk to. I love talking to Reggie Ragland today. He was great. But he tweaked some things on the roster, but he's really had one off season to kind of put his fingerprints on it and seemingly put the fingerprints of Andy Reid on it, right, to give him what Brett Veach thinks are Andy Reid-type players. Do you get a sense that that's happening, that this is more of a transition than maybe we're giving it credit for?
Perhaps. And I think in some ways, yes, and here are the reasons why. Whenever you talk to someone about Sammy Watkins, particularly after they brought him in for that much money, which, you know, some people were, you know, surprised, they always said that Sammy ran and worked the way you would want a professional athlete to work, like always ran hard. Now, did Jared Goff get him the ball a lot? No. He came in literally around week one and learned the entire Rams offense, was on the field all the time, was a workman on the field to get past, you know, his injury-plagued years. Anthony Hitchens, very smart, very cerebral, like a pro's pro in a lot of ways, reminds a lot of folks here of Derek Johnson. Then you bring in this draft class, and someone who I think is really intriguing but, you know, doesn't necessarily have the spotlight on him is Derek Nnadi. And I spent some time with him, and Derek Nnadi is, again, hard, strong man, going to work, going to come here every day.
Right guy.
Has a family that has put him in a position where you think, okay, this guy can succeed at this level with this amount of attention that you're kind of thrusted into when you're, you know, a draft pick in the NFL. So there are examples of guys that they brought in who are not, from a personality standpoint,
right,
like one Marcus Peters. and there is a sense around the league where I've asked, you know, and Andy's a traditionalist, and I get that, and so this sort of leans to this conclusion as, like, It probably is costing the Chiefs money to be here, to be in St. Joe, to come here every year and do as close to the old school way of doing it as you do in training camp, when every other team is saving money by having it at their facility. And one of the answers I get, and I'm probably going to write this at some point, is the idea that we need to work. We need these guys to understand that, like, you need to be a professional, and we work, and this is the way for Andy that he likes it to be done. And sure, you can have personality, you can work within the system, but at some point we need you to be accountable. And part of why that happens here is because it starts here in St. Joe versus, you know, sleeping in your own bed, not hanging out with teammates for 14 to 16 hours a day, like perhaps some teams are doing now, having their training camp at their regular facility.
Help me out. So you're going to write about it, and tomorrow's the last day here in St. Joe.
Yes.
And it's this constant every year. We're not sure if we're coming back. And
yes, but they're coming back. They're coming back.
You're confident
I have talked to enough people to get the sense that they're coming back.
Well, I think
it's
they're
not,
coming back.
Yeah, it's not like official. I mean, I should – you know, this is a speculation, though. I will put that sort of label on it. This is not speculation. This is a gathering of people within both sides, St. Joe /
why does it take to, like, you know, because
the Chiefs ask for more things every year, and so okay. from a funding standpoint, from a school trying to figure out, you know, I think it been, I mean, what were you in nine years ago, this was totally a boom for Missouri Western, and now it's a fact of
there's a lot of tax dollars at UCC,
yes,
over there,
mm-hmm, by the stadium,
that indoor practice facility, the stadium itself, mm-hmm, the field. I mean, that's where I'm curious. How is it costing the Chiefs money? Can you explain that one? That sounds to me like something somebody over at Arrowhead would say. But they're not bringing anybody onto their grounds,
right?
And if they take it in house, they're not.
If you take it in house, you don't. You're not the equipment, the service staff. God, there's flies everywhere.
No, there's not. Furnace is right. 9 years ago, there were. There's not.
Yeah, that's true. But I think some teams have understood that if we just have it like business as usual, like if it was week seven of the season, that we just keep the same bottom line, that there's no flux or something that goes on with all the equipment that's necessary. And I think, you know, to some degree, there is a financial exchange. Now, I don't know the exact
numbers.
Other
than the moving expenses, I don't know what expenses they have up here.
I think
I don't know. I'm not saying they don't.
Yeah, my understanding is the Chiefs help Missouri Western just as much as Missouri Western helps the Chiefs. And the financial breakdown of that, I have not gotten, like, you know, a full spreadsheet or full
like if you want to tell me that enrollment's up,
which
1,200
it is,
people,
which it is, not that much, but yeah, like something, yeah.
Well, over 9 years it might be,
yeah, you know, right.
You know, if you want to tell me that it's brought cachet to the, you know, all that stuff, hey, I'll listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember the dollars that, you know, were kicking around, and part of how they ended up here, everyone needs to remember, was this was the payback for renovating Arrowhead.
Mm-hmm.
Was you come back, we're going to throw hundreds of millions of dollars into your stadium.
Right.
And part of the payback is you bring the training camp here and you help out a local university as opposed to University of Wisconsin River Falls. That was part of the trade-off that the politicians wanted for that. So they're going to be back then.
Yes, yeah. Now, all indications, you know, no one has told me that, like, well, I don't know, like, we're still kind of no. I think even Mark Donovan went on the record with us. Or maybe it was in a side discussion that I had with him after the fact. Again, the days are long, and my memory is not as great as it needs to be. But Mark Donovan basically said that, yes, we're coming back this year. Or coming back next year, excuse me.
Okay. And so, but is there a timeline where that ends?
Now the question becomes, who's the head coach? Because Andy is all in on coming to training camp every year,
yeah,
year after year.
School.
Yes. So that would come down to a coach and front office. Because I think Clark is fine with it. The way it is, or, you know, expanding it as much as you can for where the league is. But I get a sense that a lot of this is Andy, too. Like, Andy likes, again, bringing the guys here, starting the way you always started an NFL season versus other teams trending in the opposite direction from a culture standpoint.
Okay.
So if Andy's not the coach, then the next coach may say, well, this is the way the league is, or this is the way the league's going, and this is better for, you know, XYZ.
Right. Okay. We're talking to Nate Taylor right now from The Athletic about the Kansas City Chiefs. One more practice here tomorrow, maybe. So stay tuned on that, as there's a lot of rain that's supposed to be coming in, and which sucks because it's Military Appreciation Day, which is one of the cooler days, and we got rain on it last year. So hopefully that's not the case, but it's not looking good.
No,
so
it's like a 90% chance of rain last time I looked.
Curtis called it 100.
Yeah, at least Weather Channel app for St. Joe said 100%
okay.
Tomorrow.
From when to when?
Bring the umbrella.
Let's see.
Yeah, we'll find out on that front. But so they're going to be wrapping up one way or another here.
Starts at 90% starting at 7 a.m., and it's that way all day. Drops to 80% at 6 p.m. So it's 90% chance from 7 a.m.
Well, and you know what? This area, and I know, like, our buddy Johnny Walker, who's a farmer up here. How about that for a name?
That's a great name.
That's
a great name.
Johnny Walker was telling me about the farmers up here, how bad they need the rain. So, listen, if it washes out practice, that sucks for us. But I know it's very important for a lot of the farming community up here. So that'll be good news, and we'll put a smile on our face for that they get the rain that they desperately need up here for their crops. But one way or another, the final practice is going to be tomorrow. Do you have an indication on how much more? You said a half. Are we going to get a full half out of the first unit, or just a full half on the offensive side to give Patrick Mahomes that kind of time?
I think for the offense, I'm pretty confident that they're probably going to play a half unless something really weird or bizarre happens, because obviously they need the reps. Defense is where it gets a little tricky, because I'm not sure Anthony Hitchens or Ragland is going to play on Friday. The team, you know, on the record and off, has not given me any indication that those guys might play. Eric Berry is, you know, hasn't practiced the last 2 days with a sore heel. I know there's some concern there because he had that issue a year ago, kind of around this time. So he's probably not going to play. I'm trying to think of the other big names from the defensive standpoint. I think most of the DBs will be fine outside of Sorensen and obviously Eric Berry. But I'm not sure. It might be the Bears, and it might be like a series or two with the Packers before you see everyone fully healthy for this defense. So that's unfortunate. And Bob Sutton sort of gave indication of a possibility of him seeing that next, later on down the road this month. But I just think the defense, they want to be cautious with it because some guys like Ragland have had an injury, history of injuries. Hitchings, I think he wants to play, but I think the team's probably going to be cautious and say, hey, let's just have you for the Bears game. I'll be watching Patrick Mahomes and that offense and that offensive line and hoping that there's a little bit more continuity and chemistry and obviously more than 9 snaps.
I think we watched 2 years ago Parker Anger not run with the first unit
at all. Right.
And then start.
Yep.
We watched Watts be listed as 4th string and then start. Besides Watts, who I think they absolutely are planning on being the guy.
They need to see how much he can do now.
And I think he's the guy they want out there on the field. Who else? Anybody else that they're sandbagging, that they're showing, down on the depth chart that's going to come running out there?
That's a good question.
I think Naughty's
but he's already starting to rotate with the ones. Like if you look at these last 2 practices, he's out there with the ones, or when he practices, let's just say he had an elbow issue one of these days. But he's been out there. He won't be with the ones, but Khalil McKenzie, the young guard, can I see him with the second team offensive line? A little later on in the preseason, because he's obviously a project. But every indication from what I saw with my own eyes of the tape suggested that, they may have found, another guy who can make the transition and is only going to get better with more time.
I talked to one scout who just loved him.
His base is so good.
Yeah.
It's so strong. It's like you're not – he's got enough athleticism to make it happen, they didn't do any plays where he pulled necessarily, but that'll be something nice to watch. Where it's like, let me see you out there if you got to get a guy on the perimeter. But man, Mike McKenzie, I think he's gonna be really good. Obviously, he's got the pedigree from his family, dating back to his father. So, you're gonna look at Chase Amaro for backup tight end.
I mean, where are we?
Because Demetrius Harris is out for game one, so I got to start looking at Chase Amaro.
See if he can chip this week.
Yeah.
Jace.
Chase. Okay. Jace.
Jace.
And the reason I know is, and I listen.
There's
I
so many names.
I'll tell you why I think he can be really good.
He's got the body.
Well, for 4 years, I tried to push his turd career uphill on my dynasty team with the Jets, and to no avail.
He has caught passes from Patrick Mahomes.
He looks well, and some people were asking.
I loved him coming out of Tech, so I think he's got a real possibility to be really good in Andy Reid's scheme. And what the hell about the Jets says they know what they're doing? Nothing.
Right.
So I would never hold it against the guy that
was miscasted.
Well, the Jets don't like him. Bring him in.
Yeah, bring him in. If the Jets can't figure out what to do, then he's probably going to be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. I had picked Damian Williams to be my preseason MVP, but he's been out the last 2 days with a shoulder injury, so I'm not sure he'll play on Friday. Will Sharkhandrick West get out there? Maybe. I'm not sure if
he's... Will Sharkhandrick West make this team?
Not right now. Not if you have to make the 53 cuts, the 53-man roster right now. No, he's not on the team.
Have they kept 4 halfbacks? I mean, assuming they keep Sherman again, which I think they will.
Oh, yeah. Sherman's on the roster, yeah. Based on his deal.
If it's Ware, Williams, and Hunt, is there a fifth spot for Sharkhandrick West?
Not if DeAnthony Thomas is on this roster.
Well, listen... You gotta figure that riddle out for me.
Oh, I've been told as long as DeAnthony does what he has usually done, he will be on this roster. Go look this up. Dave Tome loves DeAnthony Thomas, just loves him. He can do so many things. He's a gunner. He's a returner. He's a scat back. He's a receiver. You just need those guys who understand what I do as a special teams guru. And he's on the roster. But, again, he's got to be healthy. He's got to make it through the preseason. But all indications are DeAnthony will probably make this roster again. And Sharkhandrick, great guy. He was in the locker room after Thursday's game, so it was good to see him because we hadn't seen him in almost 2 weeks. And you're just maybe he's playing in the third and fourth preseason game to show somebody else film.
I love Sharkendrick West, the guy. Mm-hmm. I think he's
wonderful,
he's
great, man.
But I also think that it's quite possible that this team talent wise has evolved past him.
Yes, and I think, you know, if we're being really honest, I think they will give him quite the look in probably the fourth preseason game so that he can springboard him to another roster. Because if Spencer Ware is as healthy as everyone says and what I've watched so far, and he's now doing contact drills where there's full-on tackling, Spencer Ware's, like, people forget, he was really good in 2016. If he stays healthy throughout this preseason, and again, who's making the most money out of that running back group? It's Sharkendrick West. It would just, all things are working against him, unfortunately.
Yeah, because there was no renegotiation, right? He and Spencer Ware had identical contracts.
Yes.
And they renegotiated Ware's. They did not renegotiate West.
Yes, and that's because the team, you would assume, saw where Spencer Ware was physically and said, we you know, obviously we need some help from a cap standpoint, and we want to make some incentives so that you play to the best of your talents, with the idea that maybe Sharkendrick won't be back.
Nate, great stuff as always, buddy. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yep. One more day.
One more day. One more day of you getting all dressed up for the first day of school.
coming
out here and making us fat slobs.
Hey,
look mad.
As long as my wife Holly appreciates it, it's fine with me. But, you know, she will not let me out the house in basketball shorts as much as I would love to do that here.
Yeah, well, you know, how long you been married?
Going to be 6 years later this month.
Give it seven more years.
She won't care. She'll stop caring. Yeah,
my wife.
I know.
It's just as long as you get out of the house. That's all my wife's like. Just
go do something. Yep.
Go. That's how it changes. We'll take a break, come back, give you some things you need to know here in the program.